What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you so much for tuning in to the Big Honker Podcast. Hopefully everybody's made it through hunting season in one piece. We are now into the off season. This podcast is brought to you by none other than Double T British Kennels. Mr. Corey has got some of the finest Brit Labs out there that are on the market today. You can go to his website at britlabs.com and get in contact with him there.
Buy you a pet and a working dog all together at the same spot. Great package. Logan, who works for us, he's got a dog, Delta, perfect pet, perfect hunting dog. Go to britlabs.com.
That's all you got to do. Also, we're brought to you by Hemp Hill Farm. Getting old, you get some ouchies every once in a while. There's a promo code, BHP. It will save you 20% off of checkout. They also have a way you can save 30% on your first order. CBD is the way to go. Hemp Hill Farm is naturally derived CBD. It's all organic. Taking care of all of my growing pains.
Right, Jeff. Now, they've got a gummy sale, 20% off plus free shipping.
Can't beat it.
Nope. It's hemphillfarm.com. Farm is spelled PHARM.com. I take a gummy every night for bed. Helps me sleep good. Do not wake up with a hangover. I take one about 10 o'clock. I go to bed about 10:30. Usually about 6 o'clock in the morning, I roll out of bed and I feel fine. One other thing too. I have plantar fasciitis in both feet, both my feet. I tore both of my Achilles in my younger years. It's a side effect of it. When it does bother me, it doesn't very often. I take the salve or the roll-on and put it on. It automatically wipes it out. At Turkey, he brung some to Turkey for us at all. Stood on concrete for 3 straight days. Walked 10,000 steps a day. Oh, knees get a little ouchy and stuff. They got me a new blood pressure medicine. Put that stuff, rub it on my knees and joints. Feel like a million. Feel like a 22-year-old after I do that stuff. Works perfect. Good.
Hemphillfarm.com. Next, we're brought to you by Lucky Duck. Listen, they've got a lot of products. It's predator season now. You know, people are going after coyotes and bobcats. Shoot and raccoons. You know, Lucky Duck has something for everybody. They've got kennels out there. They're 5-star crash test rated kennels. You can put it in the back of your truck and strap your dog down and not have to worry about what's going to happen to him in the event of an accident. Obviously, everybody knows about their waterfowl line. They've got the best A-frames on the market, the 2x4 blind. They're a one-stop shop. I mean, they've got everything. They've got e-collars, they've got kennels, they've got motion decoys. We ran their rotary system a couple times last year. They've also got some new products that are going to come out later in the spring and summer. So check them out at luckyduck.com. They got a turkey line out there now. I mean, they've got all sorts of stuff. So just head over to luckyduck.com, whatever you're looking for. They have something for you. That is at luckyduck.com. Next, we are brought to you by Dirty Duck Coffee. If your coffee sucks, it is not the duck. They are growing and expanding. They've got some of the best coffee that you'll ever drink. Morning Wood, Sun's Up, Guns Up, First Flight. It goes on and on. Missouri Boat Ride Blend. You can subscribe. You can get coffee shipped straight to your door. You can figure out the delivery, how often you need your coffee delivered, and you can save a little bit of money if you subscribe to their loyalty program. DirtyDuckCoffee.com. They've got amazing looking swag. Saw some of it at NWTF. Jay and Buck are great guys. They're on a whole tour with all the hunting shows coming up. So if you want to get your hands on it and try a couple different blends before you buy something, if you have a hunting show, big hunting show coming up, I'm sure they'll be there.
Check them out at DirtyDuckCoffee.com. Look for them in the East, on the East Coast. They're going to start being in Food Lion grocery stores, a few of them. So anyways, check them out at DirtyDuckCoffee.com. Best swag in the market. Great coffee. It's all we drink here at the Big Honker Lodge.
Next, we're brought to you by Shin Gear. My goodness, they had an incredible booth at NWTF. It was packed the entire time. I tried to go by and talk to them and loaded with people. They're kind of tinkering with some of their wader products. They've got the 2S system that's coming out. It's got 2 seams on it instead of 7, I believe. You know, if anything is going to go wrong on a wader, it's usually at the seam. So they're cutting down the number of seams on their new waders. The jack shirt's out. Bibs are out. I wear the bibs every single day here. Waterproof, windproof. It's all you need. Shin Gear, I'm telling you, they are the way to go.
The scout boot I wear every single day during hunting season. Every day they got a brand new, they got tons of colors. Fixing to get me some gray ones. I love them. They're great. I'm telling you right now, if you wear anything outside in your garden or nothing, even with shorts, you can put them on. They slip on, they're comfortable. It's a way to go. Shingear.com.
Next, we are brought to you by Boss Shot Shells. Bismuth is the way to go. Copper plated bismuth. Turkey season's coming up. They've got all of their turkey stuff ready to ship to your door. It's all TSS. I shoot 9s. That's what I shoot. I like a lot of pellets. In my mind, you send a hornet's nest out to them, the flop starts. So They've got War Chief. They've got their Legacy line and Waterfowl. They've got Boss Tom. The gear is amazing. Call the shop if you want any of the gear. Phone number is on their website, BossShotShells.com. We're proud to be associated with them.
Yes, On the Road with Boss. Jeff and Andy comes out in March 18th, I believe.
March 18th.
Check them out at BossShotShells.com. Thank you very much.
Next, we're brought to you by Pacific Custom Calls. Pacific Calls and Post Falls, Idaho. Anything you need. Waterfowl, geese, ducks, turkey. They've got a call for it. You know, great guys up there at Pacific Calls. They had a hell of a show at Portland. They're retooling a lot of the stuff. The PCD duck call has undergone a transformation, making it more versatile for more people to get their hands on and feel comfortable with the call. They also have the Turkey Rodeo. It is going to be April 20th, Post Falls, Idaho. They're having a big shindig up there. Bring your turkey, biggest turkey with weight, spurs, beard. Combine those. Biggest turkey will win $1,000 and a belt buckle. So they got a lot of cool things going on with Pacific Calls. Check them out, PacificCustomCalls.com. We have a promo code with them, BHP25, 25% off your order. Not going to find a better deal than that. Next, we're brought to you by Dive Bomb Industries, the leader in silhouettes, Silla socks. They are great. That's what we use out here every single day. It's easy to throw out a big spread with Dive Bomb. You can throw out 50 dozen and it's not a big deal. They got a floater line out. They got some full bodies out there now for snow geese. And that's all going on right now. Squad Fest is going to be July 19th and 20th, the 3rd or 4th. I can't remember. I think 4th. So it's coming up. Make plans to be in St. Louis around that time. Great guys and hard workers. They're always ahead of the curve.
Going to be a good time. Can't wait to see you there. Come by and see us. Andy will sign some titties.
Yeah.
Divebombindustries.com.
Next, we're brought to you by the Looking Glass Podcast. Head over to their Patreon account. Get signed up. Logan and Rebel, they put out a hell of a show. They got a bourbon review, and they're just great guys to listen to. The big sultry voice of Logan Pyatt.
The bourbon review is worth it alone. If you're a bourbon drinker, these guys, they talk about it. They know their bourbons. Professional drinkers, basically. Looking Glass Podcast on Patreon.
Next, MLR Graphics. Baseball season's coming up. You're going to need jerseys. MLR Graphics in Breckenridge, Texas can hook you up. If you head over to their website, mlrgraphics.com, you can get in contact with them. Whatever you need, shirts, hats, they can do it all there in the great city of Breckenridge, Texas.
They do all of the stuff for the Big Honker Lodge. So anything that's got a Stanfield or a BHP logo on it is done by MLR Graphics. Holler at Michael at mlrgraphics.com.
Next, we are brought to you by Ducks Unlimited. There is not an organization that is doing more on behalf of waterfowl hunters. They are putting ducks back into the sky. They are the leader in wetland conservation. Figure out a way to get involved with them. Either start a chapter, join a chapter. Your money gets put to work to put more ducks into the ecosystem for us.
And they will be having a ducks, I guess it'd be a ducks event next year. There's not one this spring. Right. Spring of 2025, being Memphis, Tennessee, will be a big convention. Will be a really good time. Look forward to seeing y'all there.
Next, we're brought to you by Alpha Outdoor Specialties, maker of the Stanfield stool. Save my back all last hunting season. Nice chair, sets out in the A-frame. You can sit up, you can sit back, you can lean back, you can swivel. It's a perfect way to spend a morning in an A-frame. No more bucket butt for me. You can find it at alphaoutdoorspecialties.com along with all their other stuff. They've got a blind caddy. You can keep your coffee up there, your shotgun shelves. You can even hang a heater buddy if you need to. They are an innovative company. So Alpha Outdoor Specialties, if you need a Stanfield stool or a blind caddy. Next, we're brought to you by Mossberg. Don't sleep on the 940 waterfowl gun. That's what we shoot out here. Oh, everything's oversized. Listen, it's cold out there. Your fingers get cold. You need big things. The charging handle is bigger. The safety's easy to get to. The 940, it's a very, very good gun. It's what we use every single day. In the blind, whenever we get to shoot, they've also got rifles. They've got all sorts of stuff. Competition guns, handguns, whatever you need to take down, you can be shooting a Mossberg. Mossberg.com.
They also are great stewards for the youth. They give us guns every year for the Gold Star Hunt, which we will have the first weekend in November or first weekend in October up here. Thank you so much, Mossberg, for reaching out and doing so much for the Gold Star kids in the military. That's Mossberg.com.
Last but not least, it is Stanfield Hunting Outfitters. You can come out here and spend time with us. Dove season will be here in just a couple short months. We got a couple openings for that.
Yes, I've got some weekday hunts during the weekdays open. I don't have a lot of weekends open. I think I got the, I may be able to do one group of eight on first weekend, which is the 8th, I believe. And then the second weekend, the 15th, I've got one group opening for 8 to 12. And that's it for the weekends. And then weekdays, we can do a private group for 20 people. Anyways, that's at stanfieldhunting.com, 940-658-3172. And if you call, Jeff will answer the phone. If not, leave a message and I'll call you back. Thank y'all for listening to the Big Honker podcast. We appreciate it. God bless y'all. Get ready March 18th. You'll start seeing the first series drop on the Road with the Boss, hosted by Jeff and Andy. Thank you. Peace out. Bye.
Love you. Bye. Watch for deer. All right, boys and girls, this episode of the podcast, we are joined by Sean Keaton. We had him on, six, 7 months ago. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But he's a DIY hunter, and he's gone all over the place hunting different states. We focus on his time in Wyoming here. A lot of valuable information in this podcast for people that hit the road and, you know, hunt different states. So enjoy this episode. Here he is, Sean Keaton.
And welcome to the Big Honker Podcast, brought to you by Pacific Game Calls. I'm Jeff Stanfield with the world famous Andy Shaver.
BHP 25, 25% off. You will not meet a better guy than Trevor Austin and Alex Yergis. They're great and their calls are phenomenal. So it's what I'll be using all turkey season. You need that shit. Go over there now. PacificCustomCalls.com.
Enjoyable day today. We're not going to do nothing after we get done with this, are we?
You're not.
Nope. I was going to tornado chase, but that looks like it's all falling away.
Yep.
Boring days. I hate off season. I'm ready for hunting season to start already.
Too cold. It's too cold for it to be severe.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's still, it's fucking March, early March. It shouldn't have severe weather.
Walked out this morning. Nothing ached. The barometric pressure was perfect. I was like, no storms tonight.
It's supposed to rain a little bit tonight and tomorrow. The next weekend, we got another good chance for weather. With us today, our friend Sean Keaton is on with us. How are you doing, Sean?
Doing great, guys. How about you?
Doing good. So we're going to talk Wyoming waterfowl hunting.
We can talk whatever we want.
Yeah, we can talk. Yeah, I guess we don't have any parameters. We're not.
We're not going to box you in.
The federal government ain't telling us yet.
Yeah, exactly. We'll talk Wyoming hunting in general. I got a whole folder of stuff that I've done in Wyoming through the years. So we can talk the whole thing in general.
We'll do that. We talk whatever we want. The federal government cannot tell us what to do, so we can do what we want.
Right.
You gave me some advice. Me and Michelle went through Wyoming on our west trip, and I did not get to take that. We got into a damn, we had to beat the blizzard. Michelle told me on our second night, we left a night early, two nights in a row, we left early from where we were staying, like at 6 o'clock at night, because of the forecast. We wasn't gonna be able to get across the pass at Lake Tahoe. And then we had to come back through when we left Oregon. And she told me, she goes, I feel like we're beating rent. You know, we're loading the shit up real fast and getting the fuck out of town real quick. But I didn't get to take that chance. I didn't get to take the trip to Thermopolis. We were going to go to Thermopolis to Jackson Hole. We saved that. That'll be another trip for us to go to. What's your favorite hunt you've ever had in Wyoming?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, I got drawn, oddly enough. You know, you always see these things like the lottery where it says somebody's going to win, might as well be you, right? No, it ain't going to be
you. Never you.
Fact of the matter is they want your money and it tax on the poor, but whatever. So I put in 2018, I put in for, so a lot of those states out west, but Wyoming in particular has what they call the Super Tag. Now, the Super Tag is a draw that you put in, $10 a chance, pure lottery, draw one name out of the hat. And it's for all the big game animals, say mountain goat, bighorn, antelope, mule deer, elk, wolf, cougar. I think there's even javelina on it. I've never seen a javelina, and I've hunted that whole state. But anyway, so they draw one name. And then there's even a package like with a rifle and some really sweet optics and stuff like that. So whatever. I put in for that. I've been putting in for it for years. Forgot all about it. Got a call, I think, around June the 7th, if I recall, the game commissioner, Wyoming, you drew the tag for elk on the super tag draw in Wyoming. One tag drawn on this. Came with a whole complete outfit of Kuyu camo, including the rain suit and everything. With the super tag, you can hunt. So the way, like, so I'll just kind of talk in general here a little bit about, like, hunting out west versus hunting here. If I'm buying a Kentucky license, I buy a Kentucky license, I can hunt anywhere in the state. And there's 129 counties or something in Kentucky, second most counties of any state in the United States. I can hunt anywhere. When you go out west hunting, you're buying tags for specific areas. So almost what we think of maybe is like counties here or something. Now, there are general tags that are a little bit larger areas, but you're not drawing for the state. Well, with the super tag, you can hunt the entire state in any season that you want. So you can archery hunt, you could rifle hunt, you could muzzleload hunt, anything you want anywhere in the state that's legal hunting. Now, out there, to hunt on a national forest, you have to have a guide. A guide can't take you on BLM land, like, say, Bureau of Land Management land, public land, that you and I could go hunt anywhere. And we'll talk about that with waterfowl here in a little bit. So anyway, I drew the one tag that year, the super sick setup of Kuyu clothing, went out there. Sarah actually went with me. Well, my wife went with me. And that's the only time I've actually hired a guide on an out west hunt. Every other hunt I've ever done is DIY. I hired a guy. We got on horse. I haven't been on a damn horse in 20 years. I got on one. We rode over 100 miles that week on horse. Dude, by day four, I was like, okay, I ain't going to kill nothing. I can't get back on that horse. I mean, it was terrible. We saw wolves. You name it. We saw everything. Finally shot an elk on the last day that I had to hunt. We found a bull. We had seen tons of bulls. I saw tons of 350 class bulls. So you think about a 300 class bull is a nice bull. A 325 is a real nice bull. 350 is a giant bull. I saw tons of 350s. And I told them, I told the guy that I went with, super good dude, Trey Heiner, if you ever need a guide out west, call that guy. He's fantastic. I said, look, my only requirement is I kill the biggest elk in Wyoming this year. That's it.
No small task. We want the biggest one.
That's exactly right. That's what I said. It's a once-in-a-lifetime draw. I'll never draw this again. There's no chance of me ever winning this thing again. I want the biggest one. So we looked over so many bulls. We saw two big bulls that he was like, man, I'd shoot them if I were you. I was like, nope. I said, how big are you? He said, 360. I said, nope, I ain't shooting it. So anyway, last day, we see this bull. He's miles and miles away. We ride. We can't find him. We get over there. We spent 4 hours riding to where he was. We couldn't find him. All of a sudden, he came out of this dark timber. I let him have it. And so anyway, we went down. This bull was so old, he only had one tooth left. And they even said he wouldn't survive the winter. He only had one tooth other than his ivories. They still have actual ivories in there. But anyway, this bull scores almost 390. And it is an absolute monster. Crazy. I mean, the only place probably in the continental United States where you can get that far away from people. You know, we were on horseback. We were riding in Area 63, Area 57. So imagine kind of like Yellowstone area, not in the park, of course, but along the fringes of it. You're riding hours and hours and hours back in it. You never see another person. I mean, you see wild ranging buffalo and stuff like this and nothing. And just a phenomenal hunt with a phenomenal animal that I'll never do again.
So whenever you're back there and you're seeing 350, 360, like, you were just like, no, I'm not doing it. We're going big.
I didn't even get my
rifle.
We're
going big or we're going home. Was your guide exactly like, what the fuck are we doing? Shoot the goddamn.
Yeah, I know. After a while, I think he was kind of like, dude, I'll freaking choke you out if you don't shoot this next bull. I'll tell you what's crazy is, too, even as sort of, you know, I kill a lot of big game animals and stuff, but even like deer and stuff around here. So if you have a deer, and you all see this, too, you have an average Joe who goes out and sees a 150-class deer. He's going to think that deer is humongous. And he's going to tell you, dude, that freaking thing's giant. A lot of areas it is giant. There are plenty of deer that don't get 150 inches, let's face it. The difference in 150 and 160 inch deer, you don't notice all that much until you've seen a whole bunch of them. And you're like, okay, he's got big twos. You know, he's wide. He's got carrying his mass out. The difference in an elk at 350 and say 360 or 370 is phenomenal. First of all, you see a lot of 5x5s that are big, giant 5x5s, but you know they're not going to score because they're missing that extra point. And so, you know, we saw these bulls, and like I said, I didn't take my gun out of scabbard one time until I pulled the trigger.
Wow.
I was like, oh, dude, that's not what I'm looking for. And I've actually got a picture. I don't know. You probably can't see it. I got it,
it was on,
email.
It was on your Skype. It was on your Skype whenever I pulled it up. I don't think I can pull it up here, but.
Oh, yeah. That's right. It's my thumbnail pic. That's a phenomenal hunt. And if you ever want Wyoming elk hunting, the best. Tons of public land. Tons of big animals. I mean, like I said, to see a 350 class bull is phenomenal. I probably saw 10.
How hard is it that area you hunted, other than the super tag you drew? How many other tags do they draw for that, or can you buy to get into that sector?
You can't. Well, okay. So the only way you can buy, and this goes for all the big game animals in Wyoming, the only way you can buy, say, a tag without having a lot of preference points, and I'll kind of talk about that in just a minute, is what's called a commissioner's tag. That year, I think each commissioner out there gets one tag, something like that. That tag auctioned for $25,000. You can buy a tag. Matter of fact, just a quick side story. The guy that killed that giant one in, I think it was Arizona or New Mexico a couple years ago, world record, he bought a commissioner's tag at an auction for something like $125,000. Hired a helicopter to scout for him for a month. Hired a whole team of guides, found this bull, found it, killed it. As far as like Area 63, just in general for elk, you need, I'm guessing, last time I looked, it was about 10 points. So that's 10 years of putting in, one point a year, to draw that area. Then at that point, you know, you kind of got to figure out. So the misconception, I think, the biggest one about big game hunting is, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to bust that. So, okay. All right. You know what? You can go out there and bust one. What you're not taking into consideration is A, extremely long range shooting, which you don't do around here. You know, people say, I shot that sucker at 150 yards. Yeah, dude, you never see nothing 150 yards out there. You're shooting stuff 600, 700, 800 Jeez. Yards. And then second of all, what are you going to do with it when you do shoot it? That's the biggest thing I think people don't take into consideration. Now, I've done it with mule deer, which are big animal and all that, and I've gotten it pulled off. But they don't take into consideration, what are you going to do with it once you get it? And that's the thing about a guy. I mean, dude, he's going to figure all that out for you. But to get back to Jeff's point, 8 to 10 points typically. There's a maximum on points on a lot of those things. I think it's 15. I've actually got 13 on moose in New Hampshire right now and haven't been drawn. If you ever want to hunt sort of the two big boys on the – well, three big boys, I guess, and say in Wyoming would be – mountain goat, bighorn, and moose. Those typically are going to take 20 points. So somebody like me or Jeff, I'm guessing Andy's a lot younger than us.
Yes.
Somebody like me or Jeff's not going to draw that hunt in our life when we could go do it if we started right now. You know, you've got 20, 25 years of drawing, of putting in to draw that hunt. We can't do that. You know, that hunt's out unless you're going to buy a tag somewhere for it.
Right. So whenever you were out here hunting with us and that one day I said, we're all or nothing on this next flock. You're like, fuck, this is no big deal. I'm used to it.
That's exactly right. I'm like, dude, we'll go home and tag soup if we have to. I don't care. Let's make it big. You know, let's go big. Let's do this.
So backstory on that, we were hunting and the birds had all kind of gone past us and we were having an okay morning. And the field was, it had every bird in the area in one field and half of them got up. And they worked pretty good. We got a flock, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, something like that. But I could kind of tell, like, this next big wave's going to get up, and they're working right. Like, the wind's in their face. They're liking what they're seeing. And I told everybody. I told them all sitting out there. I said, we're either going to get every single goose in a tornado to do it, or we're not going to pull the trigger. I said, so get your mind right now.
It was Sean and Brian.
I said, so just it's
last weekend of the year.
Yeah. It was the last Saturday of the year. I said, it's either going to be big or we're not going to shoot it. We're not even going to pull up our guns. And we had one small sector come in. And he said his wife was getting antsy, like, shoot these. And then we let them go, and that whole sky behind them just fucking sucked right in and did it perfect.
Yep. That was it. Limits.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Limits on that last flock. So
yeah, absolutely.
Sean's used to go big or go home.
Well, sounds like he's damn lucky and got a golden horseshoe up his ass.
Which we need.
Yeah, that's probably closer to the truth, right?
Could you have sold that tag you won?
Yeah, absolutely. What? Yeah, for you used to get thousands of dollars. It's in essence a commissioner tag, except for commissioner's tags are typically for regions. With the super tag, you can go anywhere in the state that legal.
Could you shot anything, or was it just a elk?
Just an elk, yeah. It's specific for animal. So there'll be one wolf, one cougar, one elk, one deer, one antelope. So if you picture Wyoming basically being a rectangle, there's animals of multiple variety all over the state. However, anything that's in the, say, lower right corner, Cheyenne, Laramie area, is almost all going to be private land. There's little bits of public land in there, but it's checkerboard. I mean, you can hunt this mile square and not this one, and this one and not this one. You really got to go, and even up around Casper, there's not a lot, which is directly north, say, northeast. You got to kind of get into the central western part of the state, and then you get into areas where I hunted there in October before coming down with you guys in January. We had 500,000 acres of public land to hunt. People can't even grasp how much, literally put a pack on your back, put a shotgun on your shoulder, whatever, and you take off walking, and 3 days later, you're still on public land. You're not getting off of it. It's difficult to imagine because here, and maybe even in Texas, there is public land in Kentucky. Not like that. Not huge, huge swaths of it. So it is important where you're at. You kill big animals anywhere in the state. A lot of it requires a private tag, landowner tag, let's say, to get into those areas, to access those areas.
Wyoming's one of the last great places. I'm going to say Wyoming, Montana, and part of Idaho that really a true sportsman can go and do it all.
Absolutely.
Because it's not overpopulated. Yep. Montana's getting populated. Wyoming is not very populated. It doesn't. I mean, there's not much there. And it's a lot of beautiful land. So did you see moose and bear while you were on this elk hunt?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've seen them on mule deer hunts out there on DIY hunts too. But it's getting a little late. A lot of times elk hunting's getting a little bit late for the bears. You'll still see them. They'll still be out. But a lot of them are kind of starting to den up at that point, especially later in the season. So, they'll run their season, which is kind of like what we do, what I consider east, say like east of the Mississippi. Like our deer season every year is first weekend or second weekend in November, gun season I'm talking about, and then it runs four consecutive weeks or something. They'll do theirs out there the same way. Usually it's a little bit longer, so say big game season, say elk season, may start in this zone September 1st. Well, it may go till the end of October. So it's kind of up to you on your hunt planner, which is what I got all my information in my folder that I keep all the time. It's kind of up to you to figure out, hey, where do I fit into this whole thing? Because you have to keep also in mind weather. Plenty of those roads, and Jeff could attest to this, I'm sure he drove through some of these, plenty of those roads close. They actually have barriers that cross the road. If the snow gets bad, wind gets too bad, whatever, they'll put the barriers down. You can't get there. Which also means if you're in there, you can't get out of there. So you kind of gotta figure out, hey, do I want warm weather with animals still up high? Or do I want cold weather with animals down low, but I can't really get anywhere. See, I've run into that in North Dakota before. We do a lot of waterfowl in North Dakota. There's plenty of times, hey, I don't want to go that first week because nothing has any color. So I'll go the second week, and then, okay, well, I'll wait till the snow's come through or whatever. I'll be third or fourth week. Well, Chef, are you get out there, the water's completely froze. The only thing you can do is try and chop through ice or hunt a field or something somewhere. A lot of the birds are gone. They do have better color, but you're always playing anytime you get up north, you're playing a pretty fine line, or you're walking a pretty fine line on access versus availability.
Yeah. So whenever you shoot this monster elk, is it automatic work for the guy? Is he chopping it up? Because like you said, you're hours in. Now you got to go hours back to.
Yeah. Hours in on horseback, bear tracks everywhere still, wolf tracks everywhere. We're out there cutting up, meat in the field. You got to imagine, too, this thing, by the time we got it all cut, I'm guessing this thing weighed close to 900 pounds on the hoof. So, you know, we cut it up. We keep all the parts. And we're all helping, and everybody's kind of chipping in. So, but you're still going to have 250 to 300 pounds to pack out. Now, we have a pack mule, and everybody has a horse. By the time we pack this thing on there, and you got the rack. Of course, the rack extends from a mule up basically at the base of the neck past his ass. Time you tie him on, they cut a log and they put this log across the back end of him and set the rack on that and tie it to that. He has a hind quarter. I think the mule had that and a hind quarter. Another hind quarter had to go on a horse. Two other front quarters had to go on horses. One of the guides walked out because we didn't have enough room. So he walked out leading a horse. I'm talking hours, you know, 11,000 feet elevation. He walked. Because you couldn't, you know, the horse couldn't carry everything. Right. So you cut it all up. We didn't debone it. Now, if I'm doing DIY stuff out there, deer, antelope, I'm deboning that sucker right where it lays. So we're going to kill it. We're going to debone it. We're going to skin it. We're going to take out the head and the meat. That's it. Some of those things, be careful if you're ever going out there. Some of those things require sex attached.
Oh.
The head is not proof of sex. Mm-hmm. So you're going, oh, I got this rack, right? You know, that proves that it was a bull or a buck or whatever. No, it's sex attached. So you can't debone it in the field if you're going to do that, which means you're going to have to bring out a large portion of the rear of that animal intact. And that can get extremely difficult. But, yeah, we hacked that sucker up right at dark, rode back in the dark hours, you know, 20 degrees, even lower than that probably. And just walking a trail on the side of a mountain, you know, a horse walking a trail that's a hoof wide. Jeez. You know, you go this direction, good night, Dolly. Crazy, absolutely crazy. Stinking branches hitting you in the face. You know, no headlights or anything. You're just going in the dark. You know, the horses know the way back, so you let them go. Craziest thing ever. Oh, my gosh. You get whacked in the face with everything coming and going.
I will never bitch about having to walk my stuff in ever again.
Yeah, you will.
Oh, I will, but
you will.
Yeah, definitely. I'm getting too old.
But you don't want to go shoot an elk in the woods anyways.
No, but I'm just talking about that guide. Like, you know, that's
a tough hunt. That's what's funny when the guys that go hunt at the Apache, what's the one down in, the one down by Ruidoso. I can't remember that. It's
Yeah.
Like
Area 11 or something, I think. I know what you're talking about.
In New Mexico. And those guys pay that the tribe kills 20 elk a year or something. I'm sure my numbers are off, but you do a sealed bid. And if you say I'll pay $100,000 and your bid is the third bid, you get to shoot the third biggest elk. And I think they drive out in a freaking truck and you shoot old Patches over there. That's that one over the right. And they shoot it and load it in a truck. You go back and drink you a $100 bottle of scotch and you go down the road or $500 bottle, whatever it is. You went on a true hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
With a lot of hardcore.
I mean, the hardest thing mentally, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do. Physically, you're sitting there on the horse all day, right? I mean, it's not killing you physically.
That don't sound fun.
Mentally, it is incredibly difficult. Today after day, get up. You're hurting. There's no air. You can't breathe. You're freezing cold. You're tired. To know you're getting back and you're riding back hours and hours and hours to potentially do nothing. Because, you know, for 5 days, we did nothing. I didn't pull trigger on nothing. You know what I mean? So your day after day, the mental aspect of that is by far the hardest part.
I'm real thin on patience. I'd have shot a deer the first 15 minutes or an elk. I would have shot one.
That 300 looks good.
That 300 looks good. Boom, let's go home.
That's the biggest spike I've ever seen. I'll take that one.
I'm telling you, I went to the Boundary Waters one time, and if I did my trip all over again, we would have camped right across from where we drove. We'd have 100 yards from the boat ramp. We could have went across and got pizza in town. Mm. Do it all over again. I'm just not that hardcore about it. So was that the biggest elk shot in Wyoming that year?
You know, I don't know. They don't really keep a good track on it. No, there's a group called WYOGA, Wyoming Guide Association. They put out a really nice book, too, by the way. You can subscribe to that and get that book. It shows you pictures of everything the year before. I believe there was an elk killed that was a little over 400. I think, don't quote me on that year it was non-typical. This one was typical 6x6. You know, anything with more than 6 points on either side, any oddball points, whatever, puts you in a non-typical class, which means you got to score more to make it in, say, Boone and Crockett. But this animal would make Boone and Crockett. I never put it in it, but it would. But they don't really keep a definitive record of those because, you know, it's kind of like Kentucky in that you know, you got to have your tag, and you got to tag it, and you got to do all that kind of stuff. At that point, you leave with it. Nobody knows. You know, nobody knows how big the thing was or whatever. You know, Kentucky now on our, you have to check in all your stuff online now. Nobody even sees it. And the qualification of, does it have an antler bigger than 4 inches or something? Well, that's it. You know, it's like a turkey, for instance. Turkey, was it a male or female with a beard? Had to have a beard 6 inches or longer. Nobody really knows. So I don't guess they really keep much track on it. But it's a giant. Right. That sucker hangs in the living room and takes the entire living room wall.
That's a big old elk. That elk would have cost, what, $15,000 to $20,000 on a guide if you'd have bought that deer, elk from a guide.
If you'd have had the points and hired a guide.
$15,000 to $20,000. That's an amazing deal. The elk in Yellowstone are amazing that people see. I got 400 class elk are everywhere. Is it Manitou Springs? Is that what it's called on the north end of the park, or Mammoth Springs?
Manitou, I think.
There's big ass elk, and there's a big. That's the only place I've seen at Hoover Dam, and I saw them up there. The rams. Bighorn sheep. The only place I've ever seen them in my life, and it's an amazing animal to see. Well, it's such a unique area. Sure. Now, did you do some? You've done some waterfowl hunting in Wyoming, also.
And I'll tell you what, I've done that and some upland birds too, which we'll kind of talk about in general, sort of the two of them. There's fantastic hunting out there. So I'll just kind of talk about in general, just the hunting in general, first of all. So if you imagine, let's say, like, we go to Texas, and, you know, we're going to hunt with you guys. Where you're at versus, say, hunting in Mansfield. You know, where you're going to haul out salt water and you're in an airboat and you're going out there. So you look, well, those are totally different. Well, in reality, that hunting's fairly similar in a lot of ways. You know, you're still killing ducks. You're still killing widgeons. You're still killing blue wings or green wings. You're still killing similar birds. You're using the same decoys. But the hunt's different. The whole scope of it's different because you're not, you know, the Mansfield, you're not hunting fields. You're going to hunt big water, right? So when you go out west, you run into more, say, small water. No fields because none of that's planted. You know, it's all sage country. Occasionally, now I say that, you get down in some of the river bottoms, there are some crop fields. But for the most part, this is large sage flats, plateaus, rivers. Kind of classic. If for people that haven't been out there, if you just sort of close your eyes and picture fly fishing in your head, that's sort of, it's the rumbling streams over the stones and, you know, that sort of stuff. But most of this, and where you can really get into some top-notch hunts, is all this WMA, but BLM land. So if you ever look at a map that shows BLM land, BLM shows up yellow on a map. That's how they demarcate it. And if you get like the OnX app, there's several apps, but OnX, I know right off the top of my head, will show you that. All public land that you can hunt. So imagine areas that are fairly dry, like I said, big sage flats and stuff like that are fairly dry with ponds here and there and everywhere, which is why this young generation's got it made, because you got these apps. You know, we used to have to climb to the top of a hill and look over and see if there was any damn thing. And then when you walk back, you climbed up the next hill, you know, there was no water, right? Now you can look at it on the app and you can see where the water is. Some of the biggest challenge there can be getting the damn vehicle far enough away. Far, you're down a big sage flat ball, right? You park the truck a mile away, it's still in plain sight, which won't necessarily affect your hunt, but it can, you know, especially if you're driving some big white-ass vehicle or something, you know, and you're going to park down there 100 yards away. Well, you ain't going to shoot nothing out of that. So you're going to go out there, you're going to find these areas. They're easily scoutable because a lot of the water is backed up from roads. So say, you know, they went in and they built up these gravel roads, not hard surface roads, but gravel roads. And then the water backed up from those. So a lot of the water is close to the road, so it's easy to scout. But you're going to have kind of two hunts. You're going to have your shallow water river hunt, heavy current, big anchors, pretty slick rocks. Or you're going to have your lonely little pond that's off over the rise that nobody really sees, and two cars drive by the whole day, you know, and that's more sort of transition birds, if you will. I think that those birds aren't staying there for a long period of time. You know, those birds are coming in there, and these ponds have some grass or they have some weeds. But it's not like where you're at or where I'm at, where they come in and hell, they walk up on the damn shore and eat all the grass they wanted. There's not grass in any of this area. You know, the grass is in the water, and that's it. Because, again, it's all sage bushes. It's all tumbleweeds. It's all whatever it is, you know, whatever's growing in that particular area. But it ain't food. So you get these birds that are sort of transitioning down as they're migrating. But they'll use that same pond day after day for a few days. So you come in there, you have your nice little hunt. The next day, you're not going back there. That you're not going back to that spot again that year.
Right.
You know, you're gonna go find you another spot for the next day. Now, the river, different hunt, right? Transition birds for a certain period, to an extent, but birds that are probably working some areas around there, you know, that have found some fields because you're in the river bottom and you got a lot of flat down there. Super easy to hide in any of those places. Hiding, it's funny because when we come down there and hunt with you guys or when you're up here or wherever we're hunting, hiding is like number one. If you can't freaking hide, you're not going to kill nothing. Right? I mean, you know, you go to North Dakota, you're hunting a picked bean field. Dude, hiding's your biggest issue. You're just going to lay on the freaking ground. Out there, hiding is literally the last thing on your mind. There's bushes, there's sagebrush, there's trees, there's willows, there's aspens, there's a million places to hide. That's literally, don't even take a blind. If you're loading up from Texas, you're going out there to hunt, you're not taking anything to hide. You know, how far you can take a damn chair if you want, you know, something to sit on. But you're not hiding. It's not a concern. You're going to use the same decoys. You know, you're still using your mallard decoys, gadwall decoys. There are divers, especially if you get to the rivers. You don't see the divers in the ponds as much as you see them on the rivers. You'll see there's a lot of sawbills. I mean, you can shoot sawbills too. You're sick of them if you want. Golden eyes. You know, you'll shoot some redheads, things of that nature. It's mostly puddle ducks. And then, so the other thing that comes to mind is access points. So you've got all of this public land, but if you're hunting, say, rivers, your biggest issue is access points. It's private land to the edge of the rivers. Now you can access it from public points and tear out, right, and just go wherever you want from there, which is small boat type stuff, kayak. You know, it's not big John boat country. You know, you're not going out there with a 24-foot Sea Arc, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It's not mud motor stuff. It's all rock. But you narrow down by your access points. You find those access points, and you go down around the corner or whatever. Those birds, though, move throughout the day more so than they do in areas where birds tend to sit for a long time. Those birds may go down here, get a little something. They come up here, then they float by, and then they fly back up, and then they float. It's almost like a drift trip. You know, like if you're drift fishing. And so they're constantly on the move. So more so than hunting, say, out east where, okay, 10 o'clock's over with, you know, shit ain't going to fly now. We might as well pack our stuff up until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. No, you see many of them flying at 11 as you saw at 8.
Right.
So big difference in that.
That's how Texas is with the access points. Because the river, it's public land here, but you got to have a place that you can access it.
Yes. You either got to jump off the bridge or you got to have somebody to get you some land on it.
I don't know. I mean, in our area,
there's very little public hunting. You can hunt.
But the river's public if you can get to it.
And you got to stay in the water. You have to stay within the boundaries of a high tide, I believe, or the when it's full. I know in a lot of the lakes in Texas, you can hunt. As long as you're in the lake, you're okay, but you can't step off the land because then you're trespassing. Okay. What about the big thing in Wyoming that everybody wants to do, and one of the hottest hunts in waterfowl, is people that want to go hunt, shoot the mallards on the little small hot springs. Have you done a lot of that?
Yeah. I've not hunted the hot spring. I've been around the hot spring. I've been in the hot springs in Thermopolis and stuff. A lot. So like the majority of even the river, say the river I was telling you that drive from Thermopolis up toward Worland and all that kind of stuff, that water stays open no matter what, cause it's running constantly. Now your ponds and stuff will freeze over, but there are access points close to those hot springs that you're talking about. And I've actually seen a lot of ducks on them. I was up on hunting and saw a lot of ducks in those areas. You don't necessarily need that as much as what you might in other places, say North Dakota, for instance. Not necessarily that you're hunting hot springs, but you can find places where water comes through and is moving, and those birds will pile in there, especially when everything freezes up. Wyoming, not so much, because there's mallards, you know, predominantly mallards, and there's always open water. So you can access open water and shoot mallards. That's not the big boy. You know, if you want to target an off species or something, that's where you're kind of going to get out and do a little something different. But yeah, you can shoot a lot of mallards.
Everybody wants to shoot mallards and everybody wants to go to Wyoming and shoot the Hot Springs mallards because you're shooting over six decoys. It's just a little narrow channel, and that's what everybody wants to do. I mean, I get so many people that'll tell me about that. And to me, that's a very enticing deal. Mm-hmm. To me, it would be very enjoyable. Yeah. You're going to shoot big geese, and you're going to get a chance to shoot some mallards. And you can't do that over Hot Springs everywhere. And a lot of that's public land too, correct?
Uh-huh. Yep, absolutely, with access points and stuff. And again, you're talking about, you know, you only have to walk. Now, that's the other thing too. If you're hunting, say, out here versus out there, you have to keep in mind you're never going to hunt very many decoys. You know, if you're going out there and you're hunting one of those ponds, let's just say, the biggest one I saw in October when I was out there, the biggest one was maybe acre and a half. You know, you're not going to go hunt four dozen decoys on that. The river, like what Jeff's talking about, the rivers and the hot springs, some of those may be 3 feet wide. I've seen trout in some streams that I could jump over that were literally 3-4 pound trout. Then, so like the actual rivers, you know, you could skip a rock across. Mm-hmm. You're not taking big giant decoy spreads. You know, you're going to take 6, 8, 10, 12 decoys. You're going to put them in a bag, put it on your back, and you're going to take off. You know, hey, go up here around the bend where nobody's at. And plenty of that stuff. So now, of course, they're affected almost like South Texas. Say not so much here, because when you're hunting the Ohio River, there's always water. You know, you never run out of water out there. Sucker's 40 feet deep, even in the summer. They're more affected by dry conditions, probably like you all are, than say someplace like here. So you may go out there and there may be a beautiful stream there and you go, boy, this sucker's awesome. You go out there a month later, that sucker's gone. There wasn't enough snow melt or whatever it is to keep that sucker going. So you are affected a little bit more out there. You may get out there and there may be a trickle of water. Well, you know, you're not killing anything over 3 inches of water, so you're going to go find you another spot. The thing about it is like on the rivers. So you got your access point. It's clearly marked, and you can also get a map. I think it's even on the OnX app. Don't quote me on that. I know you can get a map that shows how far you can actually walk down the bank on public land before you hit someplace that's private that they're going to say, hey, you can't get on this. But it's clearly marked. Someplace you might be able to walk a mile just down the shore. And there's paths there because people have been fishing. And so they've literally beat a path, you know, all summer long. You throw your decoys on your back. You take off, walk down the trail. You never got your foot wet. All into you got wherever you were going. So, you know, you'll see your divers, but for the most part, you're going to shoot mallards.
Yeah.
You know, you'll shoot a few shovelers, you'll shoot a few pintails, you'll shoot a few widgets. It's going to be primarily mallards. Now, when you get out on the bigger water, you know, you get to see bigger water, you know, 7,500 feet wide, you know, bigger water, you'll see more divers, especially golden eyes. If you want to shoot a beauty golden eye, man, perfect place for that.
Have you done any of the fishing out there?
I did a little. I've done it in Montana and Wyoming. Same spot. Matter of fact, if you had the collapsible rods, dude, fantastic idea. Take that sucker with you. And when you're sitting there and ain't shit flying, pull that sucker out. You chuck it in the bushes. Nothing, you know, it doesn't flare anything chucking your fishing rod in the bushes. I've seen plenty of dudes fishing while nothing's flying. I got my spread out here. I'm going to the bottom end of the spread. I'm guessing I got 10,000 places to hide. I got my shotgun on my damn back. You know, you're doing both. That's true cast and blast because you're doing it at the same damn time. Yeah, great fishing. And also, they do it. I'll tell you what. Well, I mean, by far, the best I've ever been about all of their sort of like game commissioners, I guess is the word you use for it, are all listed on their website, on the Wyoming Game and Fish website, with their phone numbers. You call those people, and they will help you immensely. I have literally been out there before on a mule deer hunt, and in 3 days hadn't seen a damn mule deer and thought, this freaking sucks. I call one of them up, dude, look, this is where I'm at. I haven't seen crap. Okay, where you been going? Okay, this is where we parked. Okay, no, you're not going to see anything there. Go north of the road. You know, put your pack on and go north of the road. There's going to be mule deer in there. Go, you're on the totally wrong place. They haven't come down yet. And they'll do the same thing with fishing. You know, they'll tell you, hey, what are you doing down there? You know, you're not going to run anything down there. Go over here where the water's a little deeper. The fish haven't transitioned into shallow water yet or come back into deep water yet. They're a fantastic resource. And everyone that I've ever called has said, you know, well, a lot of times they say you're an idiot. You know, I've had plenty of time when I was on that mule deer hunt. And I'm like, man, I've killed myself. My brother and I have been everywhere. Why in the hell are you down there? Dude, there's no mule deer. Yeah, no, because I walked all over it. Because, dude, no, he said, literally, go south, go down this road. We saw mule deer literally when we pulled up. We hadn't seen one in 3 days. And he just knows. They know and they're willing to help. That's the biggest
thing. That's awesome. I mean, it really is to lend a helping hand like right. that.
Yeah,
absolutely. To somebody that they don't
and
even know.
And I'm going to tell you specific places. Yep.
What do I've never eaten a mule deer. Are they especially like a sage brush?
All of them are fine. I'll tell you, I love antelope. Yeah. Love elk, fantastic. Mule deer is about like so. Your mule deer. So let's say you go out there. They have whitetails. Whitetails are purely in the bottoms. You do not see whitetails on sagebrush flats. Mule deer, you'll rarely see in the bottoms unless they're going down for a drink. They prefer to stay in the sagebrush. So they're eating sage primarily. Yes. There's a little bit of grasses up there, but it's sage. They're fine. Not outstanding by any stretch. I think the antelope's way better. Mule deer's a big, that's the other thing too. That's a big animal. It's a 400-pound animal on the hoof. Big son of a gun with a lot of meat on it. You got to figure out something to do with when you get it. They have donation places out there. We've donated several of them if we flew out, like on a hunt. You know, we just wanted, you know, we wanted a good experience. We wanted a rack. We wanted whatever. They've got places to donate hunters for the hungry. So that's the other thing to keep in mind is, too, you know, let's just say waterfowl, for instance. Perfect example. So I can shoot six a day, 12 in possession, or is it 20? No, it's 24. No, it's 18 in possession, right? It's three days. It's 12, 18. Yeah, so it's 18 in possession. So I'm going to go out there for a week. Well, I'm going to fly out there because it's too damn far for me to drive. So I go out after 3 days, I've got 18 birds. Now what am I going to do? I can't ditch them or else I'm going to be in big-ass trouble. So my thing's on me about it, right? I can gift them to somebody if I find somebody out there that wants them, or else I've got to start eating them. I'm staying at a hotel. I don't have any way of preparing them, right? I love duck. One of my favorite things to eat. I could prepare it 10,000 ways. I don't have the ability to do it there. So some thought has to go into, hey, what are you going to do with this? Then I'm going to fly, right? So if I'm going to fly, okay, so I go out there. I breasted these out. Not if I'm flying because it's got to have a head or wing attached, right? Because I'm taking it across state lines. Now, you don't get checked doing that much, and I've done that plenty of times. You know, you breast out the birds, you take them back with you, right? But you're supposed to have a head or wing attached across, take something across state lines. So there you are kind of with the, well, you know, what I do now. And the same thing with meat. So let's just say you're flying because you don't have the ability to drive, or, you know, you don't want to drive that far or whatever. Okay, so now I've got 100 pounds of meat that I can buy, so I can freeze it. But I'm in a hotel room with the freezer this big. I ain't going to freeze it there. I can still freeze it and take it with me. I can put it in a cooler and I can check it as checked baggage. I get 50 pounds on that. That next bag. So if I had a gun case and a suitcase, that's my two bags, $35.50. So I'm out $85 for that. The next bag is like $100. That only got 50 pounds of it. I can take as many. I think it's like eight bags. It used to be. It might be five now. I don't know. So I can take another one. I'm going out and I'm buying two coolers and I'm packing 50 pounds in each. I got to hope they're not 51 pounds though, because then they're going to tag me on top of it. That son of a bitch ends up costing me $1,000 to bring it back by the time you're buying the stuff and paying the overages on it. And that's, dogs aren't going to get you necessarily on the weight, but you're still going to have weight in a certain bag. You know what I'm saying? So some thought needs to go into the preparation of this as well. And earlier, just not to get off topic here, but earlier I was talking about upland birds. Wild Hungarians, wild chuckers, sagegrass everywhere. In a good year, you'll see 100 driving around. I'm talking coveys of 20, 30, 40 birds apiece. Phenomenal upland hunting. Buy a tag, over counter, buy a license over counter, $30, whatever it is, non-resident for a day or a week or however you want to do it. You know, you want to do a day of upland hunting, drive out, find you a drainage somewhere, start walking. You ain't got to have a bird dog. But so again, there's got to be thought in what I'm doing with that sucker at the end of that too. You know, I'm going to cut him up. Maybe I make me a little fire out there. I stick him over. I put some sage in the breast and I cook him right there. But I'm not going to do that with 20, right? So, I mean, I got to put some thought into that too of what I'm going to do with that sucker.
So back to the mule deer and the sage. Does it taste sagey?
Yep.
It does? Absolutely. And the antelope does too.
Antelope are real bad.
Well, he likes antelope. You said you like antelope more than you like mule deer, though, right?
Yep.
So, very similar. One of the biggest problems, and one of that's going to face you going to Wyoming and hunt, is one of the reasons Wyoming has got so much game is that there's not a lot of places to stay. It's the population centers are very small, and when you get out in these areas that you'll drive 70 miles between towns, there's nowhere to stay. You better be pretty hardy and be prepared and take you a cooler full of stuff and a tent.
So where would you stay?
Well, you're going to have to stay in a bigger town because there's not many places to stay. It's like worse than South Dakota.
The last time I hunted, you're exactly right, Jeff. That's exactly right. Last time I hunted Area 57, which is, say, South Central Red Rock country, we stayed in a town called Rawlins down there. We were driving, and to Jeff's point, we were driving 80 miles one way to hunt. There's nothing any closer than that. I've stayed in Riverton. Now, when you get up around Riverton, Lander, Thermopolis, you kind of get into towns dotted closer and all that kind of stuff. Casper, sort of off over on the east side by itself. Warlands, northwest, I've stayed there. There's not a lot around there. Matter of fact, we were driving, 50, 60 miles a day one way. You're right. You're not going to go out there. So typically, a day, you get up in the morning. You're going to take what you need with you for that day. This is not drive back to town stuff for lunch. You're not going to go out and get you some lunch and then go out and hunt, come back, get some lunch, get a nap, go back out. You're taking what you want with you. And then you're going to come back at dark or whatever until you get your limit or wherever you shot a deer or whatever. A lot of times it's not going to be until dark. So the preparation portion of this whole thing is ahead of time, what am I going to do with it when I get it? And how am I going to get it back to where it needs to go? And what am I going to do during the days? I'll tell you where they'll ding you, and you got to watch out for this because this is becoming more and more common. If you fly out there and you rent a vehicle, it used to be every vehicle in America, you could drive that son of a bitch to California if you wanted. Nobody cared, right? You brought it back. It had 24,000 miles on it when you got back. They didn't say nothing, right? I talked to a guy out there one time that was hunting that drove a rental van from Pennsylvania to Wyoming and hunted and drove it back. You put 6,000 miles on a vehicle in one week. Now, you have to be extremely careful about limited miles on a rental car. Some of them are even like 700-800 miles for the period of time. Well, how far you drove that when you drove out from the rental center to where you were hunting? That's not counting, honey. Then they're going to ding the crap out of you, 20 cents a mile or something ridiculous, anything over that. How far you go to turn in your rental car, you owe them $1,500 bucks.
I did not know that. I did not know they put a mileage cap on you.
They do in some of them. You got to watch it. That's why you got to get unlimited miles. When me and Michelle did our road trip, I almost drove to Lubbock and went to Enterprise or Budget, who I use, I guess, is who I did, and started to rent a vehicle that got better gas mileage than her Tahoe and started to take it. And I thought, well, shit, it's going to cost me $500 for the week, but I'm going to put 5,000 miles on somebody else's but mine. And I'm going to save probably a couple hundred bucks just on the gas mileage. I'm going to get something that's got 35, 40 miles the gallon. Well, your mom packed so much shit that I needed to almost rent a trailer just to go behind the Tahoe to carry all of her stuff. So it wouldn't have worked. But there is times I've done that one time. We drove to Augusta and took Payne his truck when he was first got in the Army. And after a year, he got to have his own truck. We drove to Augusta, Georgia. We rented a car. We drove from Augusta, Georgia to Washington, D.C., went to the White House, got to go in the White House when Trump was in office. We drove to New York City, Philadelphia, Atlantic City, drove to Buffalo, New York, and back home in a rental car.
So that was unlimited miles, I guess.
Yes, but I checked on that before because, like you said, they're starting to – Santi, I put – I don't know how many thousands of miles. We were in a car for six freaking days, and we drove most 90% of the time.
I wouldn't have even known to even check that. I'd have just turned it back in. They'd be like, well – funny story. You're 3,000 miles over your allotted mileage.
But most times, when we go up north, we'll fly to Boston this year, and then we'll rent a vehicle and we'll drive. We won't drive 500 miles. You'll go to a lot because it's not a lot of miles to drive. But when you're out west, it's a bunch of miles. And when you're in Wyoming, I've noticed this a couple times I've been up that way. It's not like you're going to go to a little town and have a cafe to go. They may have a place to eat and they may not. It's like small town West Texas, There's some towns out here that don't have a fucking cafe open.
Right.
And you go, you drive and you're hungry as shit and you go get gas. What's there to eat? Nothing. What the hell do y'all eat? We eat at home. Mm-hmm. And there's just, there's right. not, you got to prepare. North Dakota's the same way. When you go up there to go hunting in North Dakota, you better, when we did our, we did it a couple of years in a row. We went up there. We went to Napoleon. We went to Napoleon because Napoleon had a place to stay. We rented a place to stay. Yep. Then we found places to hunt. Well, right. Wyoming's the same way, but there's less places to stay, and the little towns don't have as much stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking at the population in Wyoming. It's Cheyenne at 64,000, Casper 58, and then it drops off pretty quickly after that. 33, 31, 23, 18, 11, 11, 10.
Okay, what is 11th? The 10th biggest city?
10th biggest city is Riverton at 10,733 people.
And that's...
cool town, too, by the way. Riverton's an awesome town with a great little cafe. Jeff's talking about cafe. You want good, of course, I know, you know, I love good food. Riverton has, the spot has a cool little hunting and fishing store, too, with some awesome rifles.
Well, and then, like, you get to 11 and 12, Cody and Rollins, it's 10,000, and then Rollins is 8.82.
Is Riverton south of Biddle, Montana?
Well, Riverton's real far south. The Riverton's almost, say, if you cut the state into, say, fourths, in the bottom fourth.
I think I've been to Riverton. Is it between Cheyenne and Biddle, Montana, probably?
Cheyenne's all the way over in the far corner. Riverton's more southwest. So, no, it's over Lander. You go through Rollins. You go through south of Lander, south of Thermopolis. So if you went through Thermopolis, about two towns south of that.
I'm looking to see because that name sounds so familiar, and I bet me and Michelle were close to it.
You know, while Jeff's looking at that, too, I will say this, too. The other thing to keep in mind is if you're doing a hunt anywhere far from home. Now, you know what? I come down there to hunt with you guys. That's far, right? That's far from me. I can drive down there, but shit, I ain't doing that. But if I get down there, my shotgun goes to shit. I'm going to go, Andy, dude, you got a shotgun I can borrow. Mine's to shit. What am I going to do in Wyoming when my gun goes to shit and there's not another gun around? There's not a gun store within 100 miles of where I'm at, right? I get out there and I fall and I break them out of my scope. Or I lose my box mag or whatever there is. You know, there's 10,000 things go wrong. Break a firing pin. I was on a hunt one time, broke a firing pin and shotgun. Matter of fact, I'm not going to say the brand because I'm going to get all pissed off and red face here. I'm not going to say the brand, even though everybody loves it. I'm not going to say
it. I know who it is. You bitched about him on our hunt.
Yeah. Son of a bitches. The worst deal I ever had with a gun. These freaking whatever. I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to go there. But I was in North Dakota on a hunt and with a brand new gun, a gun that was bought brand new on Friday. On Monday, it had a swell in the barrel. Okay, so now what am I going to do? I'm in freaking North Dakota, right? I was in North Dakota on another hunt, the same freaking company, not on that particular gun because I got rid of that son of a bitch over that whole deal. The same freaking company, the rear buttstock broke. Wood furniture, rear stock, snapped. Mm. First warning of the hunt. There's not another stock out there. You're not going to go to Nodak to the farm and rob or whatever and get a stock. You're not going to do it. You better have thought about that and taken a backup gun, a backup rifle, a backup shotgun, whatever you're doing. You better have something, you know, fishing rod. You go out there with your fishing rod, it got crushed on the way out. You better have some backup plan because it ain't like you're going to go to your bro and say, hey, you know, I need to borrow yours for a while. Well, you know, you should have planned that shit.
Yeah. That so much preparation has to go into this. Like, you're not just hitting the road and like, oh, we're going to go hunt Wyoming next week.
Right.
Well, exactly. You better have your I's dotted and your T's crossed, or you're opening yourself up for a whole lot of misery.
Right. And the weirdest thing is, it's super simple to hunt. The hunt part of it's simple. It's the logistics of the whole thing. And again, the preparation. So another go out there, you tear a hole in your waders. Dude, that can happen the very first morning in two freaking seconds. Then where are you? Well, I'm going to go buy another pair of waders. Yeah, if you drive to Denver, I mean, you're, you know, 8 hours later you might, but you're not going to around there, you know, at the mom and pop store. So there's a lot of preparations got to go into that stuff. And that's why, you know, I keep my little photo here. This goes all the way back, like, to, I don't know, 2005, 2006. I've got every place I've hunted out there, what I've ran into, who I've talked to. I keep all this information because, you know, I know for a fact, right off the top of my head, there's a great hunting and fishing store in Riverton. And they have some sick, I love rifles. They got some sick-ass rifles in there. And I go in there and I just, you know, I just handle everything like it's a little child, you know. But I know for a fact that there's a place there. I know for a fact in Rawlins there ain't shit. So if I get out there and I'm and something happens, and let's face it, Murphy's Law says something's going to happen. There ain't no replacement. There ain't no me just grabbing another right. one. So I better be thinking about that.
If we could be a top 50 city if we were in Wyoming.
Why?
Well, it's just the population wise.
Knox City,
top
baby.
If we could be in the top 50 in Knox City, Texas, could be top 50 in population.
When you get out of Cheyenne and you get out of Cody and Casper yeah. and Laramie, it's pretty slim. Yeah. Then you get to the high dollar shit like at Jackson. You know, Jackson Hole, then you're going to be, you know, a Hampton Inn's going to run you $700, $800 a night.
Now, where's Jackson Hole in relation to all of this?
It's right south
of
the Tetons.
Well, where the fuck are the Tetons?
All north, north central. I'm sorry, west.
Right on the Idaho border almost.
And that's where all the yuppies go,
isn't it? If you just want to ever go to a town in America, you want to close your eyes and you want to go to a town in America and see some cool shit. It's got to be. It's like top one or two.
Jackson Hole is.
I mean, just so much stuff there to see, the Grand Tetons and just elk and there's cool stuff there in spades. I mean, but you can't stay there. That's for sure.
That's where I want to. That's one place we were gonna. We did not go on this trip. We may do that next year because there's a lot of things in Wyoming I still want to see. I've never been to Devil's Tower, and I want to see. I want to go to the Tetons. I haven't been there. It's a pretty.
You got to do that Thermopolis drive.
We had to flip a coin. It was either go to that, do that, or go to the Redwood Forest. We just didn't have time, and the weather was coming in on us. And I didn't want to get stranded. We stopped in Barstow, California, We stopped at Winslow, and both Barstow and Winslow. And Michelle was getting doing all her picture shit in Winslow, Arizona, where they got all the pictures and all the guy standing on the corner from the street. And we did all that stuff, and we grabbed something to eat right there. And I told her, I said, God, could you imagine getting stranded here? And 36 hours later, there was people stranded there for 4 days because they had the interstate shut down. And I thought, there ain't shit to do there. I can't imagine getting stranded at a Motel 6
in Winslow, Arizona.
Go start. I'd probably be arrested for murder, or she would probably be arrested for murder. I mean, it would be that bad. I just can't. And when you go out west like them places, that's a chance you take. And like you said, they got those interstate deals where they can close them down. I've been stuck in between Tucumcari and Albuquerque one time at Santa Rosa. We just happened to come in, and we drove up as they were unlocking the gates and opening the interstate. People had been stuck there for 8 or 10 or 12 hours. I thought, man, you imagine being in some nasty-ass truck stop for 12 hours?
If you're lucky, you could be on the road.
Yeah, in an electric car. Mm. I saw where they had the electric cars in Alaska going to shit.
Yeah. The worst damn stranding I ever had was on a damn Owdad hunt in West Texas. We did DIY Owdad out of Van Horn. And coming back, that ice storm hit. This was like 2010, maybe 2011, something like that. The dude said, all right, prepare for this hunt to be 70s, you know, 70s and 80s every day. We went the day after Christmas. We get down there. It's 14 the first day. The second day it snows. Hadn't snowed in 8 years or something. Third day it's 14. Fourth day it's 18. We're coming back. We killed our outhead somehow without dying. Damn it. I'm talking shanty, boy, on the Rio Grande. I mean shanty. Oof. Get on the damn interstate from Van Horn to Odessa, 10 hours.
And there ain't no place to stop there either.
No, shit. We quit counting at 250 accidents or something. It was insane. Get into Odessa, ice. I'm talking ice. To get something to eat from the hotel, we got down on our hands and knees and skated across a four-lane road to a gas station and got some damn tornadoes because everything had shut down. No flights for days. We were supposed to be back, I think, on New Year's Day. We ended up getting back January the 4th or 5th or some shit over that. God. Texas ice.
Yeah, we're not equipped for that.
But getting stranded in Odessa, Texas is better than getting stranded in frickin' middle of nowhere, Wyoming. At least you were in a town.
Absolutely. Where were we?
100%.
We were coming back skiing a couple years ago, and, you know, we drove this way. Like, we'll just drive that way back. Did not take into account the major blizzard that took place between
that was just you and Jesse.
No, the boys were with us. I think her parents were. So it was about 2 years ago then, or 3 years ago.
Oh, y'all sure did.
We skied in Red River, came back, and it's a two-lane road in New Mexico. I think maybe, I can't remember where we were.
Between Las Vegas, New Mexico.
I think it was Las Vegas. And the wind was blowing so bad. We had an 18-wheeler in front of us. We thought the fucking thing was going to just, the wind was going to blow it over. So somehow, like, we made it out, and they were shutting down the road going that way. So I'm assuming that the road that we were on behind us, I'm assuming it got shut down also. But I have never been so, like, if that 18-wheeler would have toppled over, we're fucked. Cops can't get to us. It's two-lane road.
Me and Tony and Zach went to Wichita, Kansas to a hunting show. Shit, I'm going to say early 2000s. And we got, they got 13 or 15 inches of snow in Wichita, Kansas on a Saturday night. The show was going to be on Sunday. We drove to the place. I told Tony, I said, we're packing our shit and we're going now. We're not going to sit around here till 4 or 5 o'clock. And we'll never make it home. And we packed our shit up and we didn't have much. And Tony had a one of them old Jeep Wagoneers, four-door one, four-wheel drive. Them some bitches are some driving vehicles in the snow. They are great. And I was driving home, and we stopped and got gas somewhere around Blackwell or Ponca City, somewhere around there, and got gas. And we filled up, and the interstate was, man, just two lanes. It was solid white. There was cars in the ditches ever. I had a wreck. We come over a bridge, and the toll road had backed up for 2 miles, and I couldn't stop, and I hit the wall and stuff. Car quit with the Jeep would not turn left, but we could turn right. We drove all the way home in a vehicle that would not turn left. But we stopped and got gas at that little town of Blackwell, and there were people sleeping in an Allsup's. There were people, the hotels, everything. There was no place to go. Them people, two-wheel drive trucks. We gassed up. I could drive in the ditch and been fine. But we were very, very lucky in the vehicle we were in. And then you got to Oklahoma City, and it was just rain. There was no snow at all, but... Man, I'm telling you what, if you've been stranded anywhere, you need to be prepared. When you go to these places way off, you got to pay attention.
Well, that's my wife always gives me shit because we go skiing and, you know, I mean, you're going into the mountains and snow. And I mean, I'm packing. I got a go bag. I've got blankets. I've got flashlights. I've got my AR. I've got like, she's like, what are you packing all this shit for? I'm like, well,
you never know.
You don't know what's going to happen. I mean, what if an EMP drops, you know, an EMP goes off in the atmosphere and nobody has power. You know, I mean, what are we going to do then? Like, I'm going to be up there with just this couple sets of clothes. And, you know, I mean, you got to think about these things. But every year she gives me shit about it.
We have enough. Michelle is an overpacker anyways, but she is really good. And I don't give a shit if we're staying at a 5-star luxury resort or we're staying at freaking a cheap La Quinta on the side of the road traveling somewhere. She's always got a snack bag with her that we could live on for 2 or 3 days of shit. It'll have beef jerky, chips, crackers, blah, blah, blah. We always have drinks and food. And it's usually just for our own convenience because even at the nice hotels, if you want a snack at 9 o'clock or 10 or 11 o'clock at nighttime, instead of calling room service for something or going somewhere, you've got some Oreos or something. We always have something. She does that, and then I always have a gun, and I always got a go bag with me that's got stuff in case of a – like when we went on our road trip, I had stuff for a blizzard. If we got stranded on the side of the road, I had clothes we could both put on. If we had to sit in the truck for 3 days or car and wait, we'd at least would have been able to survive. But you see people all the time that get stranded. Yeah. These people with these electric vehicles are crazy right now. I saw in Alaska, they showed electric vehicles. Them things are getting $40 miles to a charge now. You fucking can't even drive across town hardly.
Oh, hell far. You can't even get across. Can't cross town. Can't get from work.
Who was the guy with y'all that had the electric car that time?
Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah. That brother, I know that thing. What spent 3 days on the charging it?
Wasn't even full. Whenever it was time to go home,
after 3 full days.
He owes me $614 for his electric bill for those 3 days.
I remember he unplugged it, and we were like, "Well, it was like 3/4 of the way full."
Yeah,
didn't even. But I mean, we don't have a supercharger out here, but I do like.
He could almost get to Dallas.
I overpack anytime, especially if the boys are with us. Like there, I could not think of a more helpless situation than needing something with two small children, and the panic that would like hit you as a father and kind of a male figure of fuck. I don't know if I can provide for them.
Well, the questions you would get from the oldest one.
Yeah, right. Yeah, how'd you not see this coming, Dad? Yeah. Like, you know, you know we had nuclear wars out here. How did you not see this happening?
That's exactly right.
So do you keep a, like a folder for every place that you go?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Every hunt that I've ever been on, any of that kind of stuff, I've got a folder
for. So you've got like a Wyoming folder and like by state?
Colorado and all that. Yeah. North Dakota. What it cost me, you know, what this was, you know, did I have any issues with anything? What's available up there? You know, is there places you can buy stuff? Do I need to take multiple stuff? I'm old school. I write all that shit down.
That will be incredible to read. I mean, you know, I'm not going to try to put you in the ground, but when you're dead and gone, people being able to go back and read about your adventures and who you ran into and quite frankly, what it costs, that would be the interesting part.
There's a really good article on a super tag hunt that came out in a magazine. I'll have to think of the magazine. I got it at home. I'll let y'all know. You could probably put it in like a tagline or something, but there's a big article on that hunt that I wrote. And they published it in this magazine, and it's literally day to day everything that went on in that hunt. It's a cool article, kind of fill you in on what we fought, you know, knee deep snow and incredible cold and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, you know, and all that's, like you said, all that's a story.
Yeah,
you know? So it might be interesting.
I wish I would have kept a log of all my hunts from when I was a kid to now. I would have loved so much on that. I used to keep it when I was a kid. I used to write down how many ducks we killed just for my own, but that was thrown away years and years ago. But
like he's got like cost of it. Like it would be interesting if I had like what a box of shotgun shells cost.
Everything, the whole thing.
When I was 12 years old or whatever.
And what's funny is young people like you, Andy, you're living the time to do this because I'm 55, 56 now. So for me to do it, I bought a log the other day about a year ago. I got a vacation book that's you keep down everywhere you go in the country and all the places you've seen and shit. It's still sitting with dust on it on my desk because I haven't put anything in it. But I need to do that. But I wish I'd had written from when I was a kid. Your boys should do that. Because when you get to be an old man, you can reflect on that. And when you read back stuff, it brings your memories back of that day. Mm-hmm. Little things you forget about. If you write it down, it will spark a memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got this right here. I don't know if you can see that.
Waterfowl Journal.
So this goes all the way back. The first hunt in this is 10/28 of 2006. Wow. And it's who hunted, where we hunted, what the weather was, what we saw, what we killed. And I printed this off somewhere. I even drew a little sketch of the decoy spread, of how many decoys we had, what the spread looked like on the pond. Awesome. Did it work? Any of that. That's in there for years of every hunt we did and what every setup was like.
That is really
pretty cool to go back and look
that
at.
That is a very, very interesting thing by any means. That's cool.
How far was that elk that you shot?
Oh, first shot, it was probably 220.
220.
Something like that.
And that's in your wheelhouse?
It wasn't far. It wasn't far because I could have shot at it far, but where it came out of the woods, we were sort of at the bottom of a draw, and it came out of the woods. Basically, I mean, 200 yards, not necessarily right next to you, but right next to you out there.
What were you comfortable at? Like, what was going to be your max distance out there?
I had shot a lot at home at 600. I could have shot at 700. I've got a range at home where I can shoot 650. Mm-hmm. I used to do tons of ballistic stuff and rifles and shotgun patterning and all that kind of stuff. So I was comfortable at 700. I mean, I probably could have poked one a little farther than that. But a lot of that's, you know, wind and all that kind of stuff. And it would be the day. But if the conditions were right, I could have poked one at 700. And if it would have been a big one, I would have gone a little farther than that. I was shooting 300 short mag. Shooting 180 grain VLD bullet. So I felt very confident in the whole setup and all that. So according to the wind and stuff, 600 for sure. If it wasn't bad, I could have poked one at 7.
You're speaking Chinese when you did all that.
700 yards, though.
No,
I get that.
I understand 700 yards, but the 180 grain, blah, blah, blah. Me and Andy, you lose us on that.
That's big?
Yeah.
That's big. That's a good size bullet. Yeah, 30 cal bullet, 180 grains. They go all the way down. You can get 30 cal bullets at 125 grain. So that's pretty good.
You're talking Chinese to both of us. Am I right, Andy? We understand shotguns, but rifles, we don't know shit about.
Next time I'm down there in September, we're going to have a big old rifle discussion. I'm going to fill y'all in on everything rifle.
We had the guys from Vortex Optics on with us on a podcast one time, and I was a spectator on the whole thing. They were so smart and mind-blowing on that tech geeky stuff that people eat up, and I just don't understand it.
We had a We had an ER doctor on talking about how he found the cure for COVID back in 2020. I was more comfortable talking to him than I was talking to those Vortex guys. And he's a physician, and he had a COVID regimen, and I at least felt like I could bullshit my way through that one.
We understood a little bit.
He was way smarter than us. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, we were way above our we were in the deep end with him. I could at least talk to him a little bit. Yes, whenever those Vortex guys started talking, I was like, oh fuck.
You talking?
I got a matter of fact. That elk rifle's got a Vortex Viper 4-16 on it right now.
They make good stuff. And you know what's crazy is I saw a guy wearing a Vortex T-shirt at the Cancun airport. I see their stuff everywhere. They're a big company. They make great stuff.
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming on here talking about Wyoming hunting.
Absolutely. And it's always good.
And I guess we'll see you in just a couple short months.
6 months, we'll see you. And the world starts going again.
The countdown football is on.
And hunting season. And I am so ready, Sean. Thank you so much for coming on. We will see you in September, my friend.
All right, Fowler.
Thank you.
Great.
Nice talk to you.
Bye, bub.
Great dude.
Yeah. Been everywhere.
Yep. Interesting folk. That's one of the cool things about our job is getting to meet really cool people.
Yeah.
All right, folks, remember March 18th, On the Road with Boss comes out.
I'm excited about that. Should be seeing the first episode here soon.
Yep, have some trailers out pretty quick. Thank y'all for listening to us. God bless y'all. Have a great, great weekend, my friends.
I got to pee.
Bye.
Love you, bye. Watch for deer. Go check out our sponsors. Go check out Mallard Bay and Guide Tech. If you're looking for a hunt this coming year, they can always help you out there. Dirty Duck Coffee, Dive Bomb Industry, Pacific Calls, BHP25. Boss Shot Shells, MLR Graphics, Shin Gear, Lucky Duck, Looking Glass Podcast, Double T British Kennels, Ducks Unlimited, Stanfield Outfitters, Mossberg, Alpha Outdoor Specialties, and Hemp Hill Farm. Use our promo code BHP.